Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. We help men deal with the life changes triggered by divorce, such as child custody and property division, among many others. But life changes also occur after divorce. These changes can make parts of your existing court order irrelevant or harder to follow. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell. We're a partner men can count on.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
You are listening to the Bird Calls on the Off the Glass Nothing But Net and Up and Under networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search the Bird Calls, and subscribe today. All right, what's up, Pelicans fans? Welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host and contributor to thebirdwrites.com, as well as B-Ball Index, Preston Ellis. And today, we're recapping the Pelicans' dominant performance against the San Antonio Spurs, 140-126, as well as asking some poignant questions like, do the Pelicans currently have two of the best players of all time on their roster? And are their names Ejuan Moore and Julius Randle? To help me answer these questions and more, please welcome onto the podcast editor-in-chief, the man who earned a twinkle in Drew Holiday's eye last night, Mr. Ali Cosell.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
I like that. What's up, Preston? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Are you still in the car?
No. I'm going to stay home just because I got to do this podcast right.
Nice. Next up, we've got the emerald, I guess, of cooking for dogs, who is soon opening the world's first gourmet restaurant for pets, Mr. Kevin Berrios. What's up, dude?
Oh, nothing much. Yeah, that's what I'm doing, cooking for dogs. I'm feeling it really.
All right, and finally, contributor to Crescent City Sports, as well as our newest addition to the Bird Rice and creator of Grub's Grub, Mr. David Grub.
Yes. So we're all doing culinary things today, I guess.
All right, here we go. You can follow those guys at Ali Cosell, at Kevin B for Bounce, and at DM Grub. 78 points in the paint, 58% shooting, 34 assists to only 11 turnovers on 59 made baskets, 78 points in the paint. These numbers are ridiculous. And a triple-double by Julius Randle, 12 points from Frank Jackson to go along with a dominant backcourt performance by Ejuan Moore and Drew Holiday, who combined for 45-13 on 19 of 29 shooting. The Pelicans also held DeMar DeRozan to 7 of 19 from the field, and LaMarcus Aldridge to a ridiculous 2 of 11. Ali, what was the story of the night?
I'm still getting over the fact that you're really a morning person. I mean, I'm loving this. Anyway, the story of the night was the simple fact that, once again, we saw a team that kind of got out of the gate slowly defensively. Like, it's become a theme, really. And then they just tore apart the Spurs in the second half. And everybody contributed. You know, I think they're finding out the rotations. I think that's my biggest takeaway from the night. When you've got Drew Holiday out there, he's of course going to be the lead guard with Elfrid Payton down. But when he sits down, Gentry is now giving the ball to Julius Randle. And sure as can be, he came in for Drew Holiday. The rotations worked out like that. And he brought up the ball the first four times. I was jotting things down because I was sitting there by myself. There's no David, no Andrew, no Trevor, no nobody. So I actually did some work and jotted that. So was productive. But, yeah, the Pelicans are really figuring out their rotation, something that Gentry harped on really over the first 4 weeks of the season trying to find, you know, an 8-9 man rotation, trying to figure out who belongs with who. But he's found something that works. And boy, these guys have just been a terror in second halves. And we've got to touch on, hey, we might have added just a new member to the rotation, because Frank Jackson, he looked a little bit nervous at times, but you know what? He provided that spark. He provides that person off the bench who can get by pretty much anybody at will. He's a scoring machine. And so if they could get him going, get him up to speed defensively and with the team concepts, I'm telling you, this is a scary team, and I don't want to hear about anybody trading any of these guys away.
Kevin, we do have to address the dark cloud looming over the Pelicans organization right now. As Julius Randle came into the game, Anthony Davis was a bit perturbed with it. He came to Jen Hale at the conclusion of the game and he said, "Ask me why he subbed me out of the game." He was saying that to Julius Randle. And Julius Randle then said he wanted to be Defensive Player of the Year or something. He took a shot to the face and that's his fault. I can only do what coach tells me to do. And then in the locker room, as they're talking about Anthony Davis and Julius Randle's performance, Drew Holiday says, and Ali Cosell tweeted this last night, "Here we go. The bigs are doing everything again. The infighting is just contagious at this point, Kevin. How are they going to work it out?"
I think they're going to have a thumb wrestle competition or a pencil crack competition. We'll go back to the 90s. Pencil crack competition. That's what they're going to have. It'll work.
All right, well enough. I'll give you a follow-up question. All kidding aside, it's clear that these guys are comfortable in their own skin. They're getting along great. They say the locker room has never been better. Julius Randle referred to these guys as, quote, "my brothers" in that same post-game conference with Jen Hale. All of this to say, last year, you know, they were saying with Rajon Rondo that they were having these meetups. They were texting each other late at night. But it appears now that these guys are getting along better than ever before. How is that going to translate to more victories, Kevin?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you look across Pelicans Twitter, for sure, you would say that you think that we have two stars, because everybody is saying, you know, that Drew Holiday is putting up all-star numbers. I mean, he's been an all-star before, even though that one sort of had a little asterisk next to it for a lot of people because of the injuries in the East. But the way he's playing now, clearly another star. So you have two stars. Then you have two guys that are right below that level. And the thing is, with their personalities, they all fit in together. Nobody's trying to outshine anybody else. They're buying into a team system, so the chemistry is really great. Nobody's trying to outshine anybody. And the guy who maybe is the most, I guess, has shown the most fragility on that end is Anthony Davis. And now he's clearly the lead guy, the front guy. Everything just falls into line, and then you have other quality role players like Etwan Moore, and you know, maybe Frank Jackson's going to be one. And Wesley Johnson, he's not a great player, but he's, you know, he fills his role and does what he needs to do, and nobody's trying to steal shine or do something that they shouldn't be doing. And it's all about teamwork and, you know, getting the ball to Anthony Davis and taking your shots when you got them and letting Anthony Davis shine, but also everybody, balance scoring. How many games have we seen, multiple people scoring over 20 points this year? You know, it's a total team effort. Everything's within the flow of the offense. And everybody's, you know, engaged defensively as well, even though, you know, we see lapses here and there, but you see nobody's like mailing it in. So I just think there's really good chemistry right now, and there's a great hierarchy that's been set, and the personalities work together well.
David, our resident effort expert, the San Antonio Spurs got out to a 39-point first quarter and a 9-point advantage at that time. Obviously, the Pelicans dominated in this one, but they're still struggling to come out of the gate fast. What did you see from the Pelicans in the first quarter? Does it still concern you that they seemingly lock in and engage as the game goes along?
I mean, what you see in the first quarter last night is what you've seen in the first half for most of the season, is just they allow teams to get into the paint pretty easily early on, and they were giving up open threes. It wasn't just that the Spurs were hitting them, is that they were getting good, clean looks. So I think that was the problem early, and those looks evaporated in the second half. You really didn't see the Spurs taking shots from the outside. But in that first quarter, I don't understand the maybe it's the rotation. That group that starts the first quarter just isn't a good defensive group, to start with. I don't know what it is, or maybe it's just the way the team is. I mean, last year it was after the half where we had the big problems, and now it's to start the game. So I guess you'd rather them start slowly than finish poorly. But no matter what, you just can't get off to these starts defensively where you're giving up 30-plus points to teams that are not good offensive teams like the Spurs, teams that want to milk possessions, and yet they're still getting up at a great pace. I mean, you can live with guys like Dante Cunningham. You know, last night he had the game of his life in a lot of ways, and you can live with him being hotter than normal. But you don't want to give up those looks to really quality teams, because once they get in a rhythm, they're going to continue to get those shots and feel confident about them. With the Spurs, you figured the guys who were making shots were going to cool off. But the Pelicans do have to solve that issue, because that it's okay to beat middle of the road and lower tier teams that way. But in the playoffs, you just can't do that, especially when you go on the road. And they've done that home or road so far this season.
All right, Ollie, it's time to address the elephant in the room, and that is about Julius Randle starting. I'm looking for the quote right now. You posted it. Let's play some waiting music. Okay, here Alvin Gentry says, we're probably going to start him some. And I'm writing an article about this right now. Obviously, he's got a delicious conundrum at this point. Who to start? You've got Wesley Johnson, Elfrid Payton, Etuan Moore, Julius Randle in that mix right now. But if you go through the numbers of Nikola Mirotic's pairings with Anthony Davis, they're a plus 17 when on the court together. When Julius Randle's on the floor with Anthony Davis, they're just a plus 8. But with that being said, whenever Randle's out there, there's usually some members of the bench. Jrue Holiday, Etuan Moore might not necessarily be with them. Make an argument right now as to why Julius Randle should start, and who do you take off the floor?
Well, that's a tough one, because I don't think I would change anything. So that really surprised me. That's why I mentioned that, because I was surprised Alvin mentioned it to me. We don't know what the reasoning is, so it's really hard to guess as to what's a better, you know, scenario, who should start. Is it just simply because his foot's healthier and they want to get him some more minutes and maybe say Nico is ailing a little bit? Because I still think he's not 100% from when he sprained his ankle. Or is it simply because they always had intentions of starting Julius Randle and Anthony Davis, kind of like a few of us called in preseason? We had wanted to see that starting lineup. So I honestly don't know, Preston. I don't know which way's even better, because I don't think there's a wrong answer here at all. I know that's a cop-out answer. We've used it enough times on the show here, but I think it truly applies here. And I would prefer if he stays on the bench, because as I mentioned, I like the fact that Jrue Holiday is the main initiator with the starting lineup, and then you've got Julius Randle to come in and provide all those minutes when Drew is taking his rest. So I don't know. I'm good. That's going to be my first question today in practice in about an hour and a half, because I'm very curious about this answer and why he said it.
All right, Kevin, we'll let Ollie off the hook, but we're not going to let you off the hook. We're going to start him some. Somebody has to come off the floor. Obviously, if you move Nikola Mirotic to the three, that's not his strong suit on defense, chasing guys on the perimeter. They're probably going to try to switch him early and often against smaller point guards and shooting guards. I mean, that's the most likely candidate right now. I don't want to take Etuan Moore off the floor for all the obvious reasons. We saw him last night paired with the bench whenever he was put on the ball. It just didn't go very well. He's not a natural ball handler. He's not a natural creator. He's somebody who thrives off ball, much in the same way that Jrue Holiday was. We'll get to Jrue Holiday later. He obviously has been playing very well as a point guard and a facilitator. But Kevin, back to the direct question at hand. If Randle sees the floor, who do you take off of it?
I don't take anybody off of it. I think Alvin Gentry just got bored and was trying to get y'all to talk about something, because, I mean, really, like, Randle is a guy who can create his own offense, and Mirotic isn't really. So having the fact that we don't have another quality point guard right now on the roster, I don't want to see Nico slip into the second unit and not really have anybody that can create for him. And then also, Randle is so good at the on the offensive glass and just cleaning up messes, and also setting screens to set up to make life easier for guys like Frank Jackson and Ian Clark and Darius Miller, who also, you know, are not. I mean, Frank may be a guy who can create his own shot. We haven't seen a whole lot yet. I mean, he's been promising lately, but, you know, they need some assistance, and a guy like Randle would help those guys out a lot more than a guy like Mirotic would. Even though Mirotic would stretch the floor to create lanes, what the other things that Randle does, it's more beneficial to those players. So I don't see any reason to change that. The only thing I could see that he's looking at is the slow first quarter starts defensively, where you could have maybe Randall's energy and defensive intensity, you know, change from the start instead of slow rolling into, you know, everybody's more engaged defensively and more locked down defensively. That's the only reason I would see any reason to change it. And I wouldn't do that. I would just try to figure something else out, because I just think Randall is the perfect guy off of the bench. And that's what I've said all season, like, you know, in the preseason, that's the lineup that I wanted. I wanted Randall off the bench to be a little bit more of a facilitator, a defensive enforcer, and a cleanup guy, and a guy who can get his own, because he can create his own shot. We see him finish crazy shots, like way off balance and things like that. And I just think that that's needed more when you have Anthony Davis off the floor or Drew Holiday off the floor than when you have them on the floor together.
It makes sense to me. But David, we just talked about how the Pelicans sometimes struggle coming out of the gate, not just defensively, but also offensively. And Nikola Mirotic is somebody that they depend on greatly to get going early. And he's been slumping a bit as of late. He's just 34% from three on the season. Now, the effort, you never have to be concerned about the effort with Julius Randle. He's basically Cheick Diallo on steroids. He's a facilitator. He always manages to find his way into the paint with nimble footing, with power, with foot speed. Would you think it might make sense to insert him into the starting lineup and then go with whatever your principal lineup is to close the game, just by way of inserting energy into that first 12 minutes?
I think it hurts Nico the most. And since he hasn't been on track, I don't think moving him to the bench is the smartest thing to do. You know, again, like Kevin was saying, he needs to be set up offensively. And I think getting him going early is a lot easier to do in the starting lineup than it is to have him come off as a reserve without a primary ball handler. I think that's just been the issue for Nico, is that there aren't as many opportunities for him right now to get shots in those comfortable positions that he was getting very early in the season. And, you know, he's had a couple of decent games, but yeah, the slump has been about the last 7 or 8 games. And a lot of that coincides with not having that secondary ball handler on the floor with Elfrid Payton and Drew Holiday at the same time to create those open shots for him. So I think if you move him to the bench and you have even less ball handling, you have guys who are not good at distributing the basketball, it becomes even harder for him to score. And again, with Julius, the great thing is not putting him in the starting lineup means you don't get him in foul trouble early. And Julius can pick up fouls in bunches at times. So I like that energy of his coming off the bench. Again, you don't have to write up plays for him. He can create things with his dribble, but he also can just get things off the glass. And with that second unit, that becomes so important because they do miss shots with that group. They're not as effective as scorers, and he can
I want to say something. I want to get your guys'
go ahead.
Opinion. Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. Are you done?
You can go ahead. I mean, you know, I just think that Julius fits better there as a reserve. It makes more sense. And if you want to, I don't think I'm adding any amazing, but my opinion is just, yeah, I think he fits better, and I think it's better for Nico in the long run for them to keep the roles that they have.
I feel like Grubb was crossing the intersection and an 18-wheeler just came out of nowhere and slammed him out of the way.
He hit me hard.
Grubb was Tim Frazier running into a screen.
Go for it, Ollie.
No, you know who Grubb was? He was Alvin Gentry, because Grubb cannot wait to ask a question. Sometimes he'll start asking him before he's done. So I just gave him a little payback medicine for Alvin.
That does happen. That does happen.
I want to ask you guys this, because you're making this seem like it's the worst thing in the world, which I don't like it either, but how bad is it that the Pelicans are getting off to these slow starts, but then they're like Rocky Balboa in the second halves? You know, I was looking at some numbers. They are posting the best net rating in second halves in the NBA this year. And I wanted to mention this earlier, but Drew Holiday kind of touched on last night, and I'm going to ask him today about it further, is the fact that they kind of do pride themselves on getting up for second halves, on basically delivering that knockout punch. I mean, we saw the Warriors the last few years, and I don't want to make that comparison to the Warriors, but I want to just mention that that's how the Warriors handled business. They would kind of feel out their opponent for the first 24 minutes and then just literally, you know, put their foot down after halftime. What would be so wrong with the Pelicans to adopt that? Because let's face it, it's very hard to maintain high intensity for 48 minutes over 82 games.
I agree with that. Anybody- That I agree with that. The only thing that I would say is that if you're able to put somebody down early, then you're able to play less minutes and rest guys more, especially when you're playing pace. But I mean, like you said, I understand that argument as well. You know, feel them out, be a little bit lax, and then turn it on is also fine. But, you know, if you stomp them out early, if the fourth quarter doesn't matter anymore, then, you know, you can rest guys and get other guys reps. And those things, I think, are more long-term beneficial.
And my thought was, like I said earlier, is I think you can get away with that with, you know, the second tier and the lower tier teams in the league. But I don't think you can go on the road against really good teams and give away a half of basketball. I just don't think you can do that on a consistent basis to say, well, we know we can come back in the second. We turn it on in the second. Yeah, you're going to make adjustments, and you should play better in the second half after you've made your adjustments. But I don't think you want to go into a game saying the first half is going to be the lesser of our halves. And I'm not saying that's their attitude, but if you give it, then, you know, that it's easy to forgive when you win that way. But when you lose that way, you can't – there's no excuse. Because if you're saying our philosophy is that we focus on the second half, then I think you just – I think you're setting yourself up to have bad first halves.
Yeah, I guess I'll chime in here. My only issue with it, I love the way that they attack in the second half, and obviously in the second quarter they've been exploding as well. Offensively, they seem a juggernaut that can't be stopped, which is why it becomes all the more befuddling that they do come out of the gates a bit slower, a bit less engaged. And at this point, Anthony Davis is still around 38 minutes per game. Drew Holiday's at 36 minutes per game. And we saw just what the Pelicans can do when they execute at the might of their fullest powers, is that with 5 minutes left to go in this game, up by 20, or 5:52, I should say specifically, Anthony Davis is seemingly just in the game to get a couple more points. If you just put that effort into the first quarter, maybe these guys are sitting the entire fourth period and we're getting more run from Frank Jackson, Cheick Diallo. Obviously, this is an embarrassment of riches, and that's probably something not that Alvin Gentry would institute anyway, because in an NBA game, no lead is ever too safe. But I am saying that rather than putting all this effort into the fourth quarter, why not just get it out of the way early and give these guys a break, get some of those numbers down, get some of the run out of your bench. Obviously, the bench had an incredible performance last night, and we want to continue to build upon that. We saw what Frank Jackson could do in his limited time, 12 points, and I don't know where it was, somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes, but just to get him the opportunity at those shots. You can see him just calm down as the game comes to him. Like Ali said, from the initial, that's what it felt like. It felt like he was shot out of a cannon into the game every single time. You can just see he's all over the place. He had one turnover to Cheick Diallo when he was racing down the court. Cheick Diallo is right alongside him calling for the ball. And Frank is just a little late or a little early, based on your perspective, on giving the ball to him. Cheick's not expecting it. And that's just nerves. That's 100% nerves. And it's something that will begin to dissipate as he gets more time on the floor. But to get more time on the floor, the Pelicans need to put him in position to get some of those runs, to get some of those mistakes out of the way early. But we're arguing around ourselves at 140 points. It's hard to argue that they could have scored any more than that, but I guess that's where we sit right now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. Championship.
Go for it, Grub. Or we'll go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to be a championship team, yeah, those are the things that you start, you know, picking the nits on, is just saying, you know, yeah, where are the levels that you get to be at that peak? And so, yeah, scoring 140 points is fantastic, but you should be always pushing yourself to find where are those areas where you can get better. You want to be merciless as a team. You want to say that we want to destroy people for 48 minutes. And that's where we want to get as a fan base in our expectations, is that when you see the highest level of play out of your team, you expect it all the time. And it's like, it's no different than being a parent when your kid brings home an A on a test and you say, well, why can't you do this all the time? So yeah, that's what you want to see out of the Pelicans, is to play, you know, not 48 perfect minutes, but you just don't want to see those mental lapses. And that's the thing. It's not that you're not going to have stretches of games where you don't play well. It's just the mental part of it. Why are you not rotating? Why are you not giving the full effort? Why are you not getting to, you know, defending the where you're supposed to be? You eliminate those, and you can live with if they get outscored in a quarter or two. But it's those times when you know that they are not making the best decision. And I think a lot of that comes for the reserves. Like you said, for guys like Frank Jackson, they have to play meaningful minutes to learn. And if they're only getting minutes in blowout situations, it's just not as beneficial, I think, in the long run, because at some point you're going to need Frank Jackson. You're not just going to have him as a luxury. You're going to need his minutes. And I think you're right that they have to just start applying this throughout the game and find that rhythm to where you're not jacking yourself up to get your energy to a new level. You want to play at a consistent level.
All right, let's go ahead and move on because we've only got 15 minutes left. There is an article in the Bird Writes right now written, I think, by Ali. New Orleans Pelicans must improve upon first half defensive efforts to reach maximum potential. I'm looking up to find the author of that right now. No, that's Trevor Ritchie. Trevor Ritchie, thanks, man. Great article. Let's go ahead and get to our questions. This one's from Brit Benoit. I'll give it to Ali. Why have Diallo's minutes gone down after a pretty solid start? It seems like Gentry has a habit of taking the young guys out of their flow when they are starting to get momentum.
I think this one's easy. There's just no minutes available for Check at the three, or at the four or the five. The way it is, Anthony Davis is always going to get at least around 36. And then, of course, the scraps are for Nikola and Randall, who last night, neither one even got to 30 minutes, and Diallo only played 9 minutes. So it's just really a numbers game at this point. I think Diallo has definitely exceeded expectations, and I can tell that the coaching staff is pleased. Gentry's mentioned and talked about him several times. So the growth is there, but Alvin's just using him either for a change of pace when the team is not playing well, or unfortunately it's coming more a little bit during garbage time minutes, because again, the minutes aren't there. So the Pelicans are just trying to build on their main product right now. And that's the core guys getting to play well and building them up and getting them ready for the playoff run. So unfortunately Diallo just doesn't, he's just not getting able to squeeze into that rotation. Not unless Nico can somehow figure out a way to get some minutes at the three. But if not, then yeah, this is just the way it's going to be.
All right. This question is one I want to pose to everyone. I'm going to start with Kevin. It says, how is Drew doing such a good job as a facilitator, second in the association in assists per game? And is him returning to the one a long-term option? And I'm going to add on to this one, Kevin. Obviously, that would institute Elfrid Payton coming off the bench. How would you feel with a lineup of, let's just say, Drew Holiday, Etuan Moore, Wesley Johnson, Nikola Mirotic, and Anthony Davis with Elfrid Payton coming off the bench?
I mean, I think, first off, to answer your question with a lineup, I mean, that's the lineup we're seeing right now, and it's working fine. So if they decide they want to roll with that, then sure, no problem. I think Elfrid would be better suited in the starting lineup just because he will help everybody else out. And, having Mirotic on the floor with Payton is a very good thing, whereas putting Mirotic and Randall together a lot isn't that great because of the shooting problems that you have. But, I'd be down for experimenting with it. But also, like we talked about on the last pod, whereas, I think it's an easier sell to Etuan to put him on the bench and let him be that Lou Williams kind of guy than to take a guy like Elfrid Payton, who struggled basically his whole career and finally found a spot where he was clicking and fitting in and playing very well. And then now to say, okay, now you're on the bench, that might hurt his psyche a little bit. We'd have to see. And also, we can't forget how great this team looked with Elfrid Payton as the lead guard. I mean, we looked incredible. So don't forget that. It's easy to forget that when he's been gone and we've also gone back on another winning streak. But in terms of Drew Holiday, we can't pretend that he hasn't been a point guard for most of his career. He's been on the ball most of his career. Sure, he's been great since he moved off the ball. But I think it was more he needed that just to shift in mentality to know that it's okay to be aggressive in attack. And I think he's finding a good balance of that now. He's getting to the hoop. He's driving a lot. I think I forgot, Kumar posted the stats on his drives in the paint recently. I forgot what they were. But, the eye test said he was driving like crazy, and then it was backed up by whatever stat Kumar had put. I don't remember exactly what it was, but his drives to the paint have been great. One thing that I've noticed about him lately is that he's been really creative passing wise. Now, sometimes the passes are not on target, or they're a little bit too they're too much of a gamble, but the way he's passing is just like been super creative, and he's throwing these weird passes that we never used to see from him before. And it's really fun to watch, even if they are off target sometimes or are bad decisions. But I think that's like a, you know, a growth thing. And, you know, I'm fine. I always liked him on the ball. Initially when we got Rondo, I didn't necessarily agree with taking him off the ball. It proved to be a good thing because it sort of unlocked this other aggressiveness to his game that he sort of got away from. If you go back early on in his career, you see he had that, but it sort of drifted from him due to injuries. And I think trying to fit in and trying to get Anthony Davis going, but now he knows that he is a guy that is relied upon to score and get to the rim and to create offense for himself as well as for others. So I think it's great. I think we need another ball handler, whether that's Elfrid Payton or Holiday or another guy to come in also. You know, having extra ball players, ball handlers, especially on that second unit, it's very crucial. So however they make that work, I think it's going to be fine. But I mean, don't pretend that Holiday hasn't been, I mean, he was an all-star point guard at one point in his career already. So let's not pretend that he can't play on the ball or that this is totally shocking.
Grubb, another reason that I wanted to bring up the starting lineup and the slow starts, Wesley Johnson has been a -4 in a per 100 possessions. Darius Miller, on the other hand, offensively, we know his shortcomings, but defensively, the team is 8 points better per 100 possessions. Here are some of the numbers in his five-man lineups. With Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, Darius Miller, Nikola Mirotic, and Etuan Moore, the team is 28 points better per 100 possessions. This is obviously a small sample size. And then with Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, Darius Miller, Etuan Moore, and Julius Randle, the team is 49 points better per 100 possessions. That's obviously in only 27 minutes of time. Would you see a scenario where Darius Miller starts over Wesley Johnson?
No, I think Wesley's numbers are just, you know, they're hurt because of the slow starts for the team in general. But you look at Wesley's play, and he's played extremely solid defense. I think he's on the wing, he's been a very consistent defender. He's been able to block shots. He's been able to defend in the post. He's defended well on the perimeter. So, you know, I don't think his numbers reflect the play that he has. And I just don't think Darius fits in as a starter because of his mindset. You know, last night he was more aggressive than normal. He took a couple of shots in the paint and one in the mid range. And I was, you know, that was good to see. But on a night to night basis, I think you just the mentality of Wesley Johnson as a veteran, a guy who's confident in his place in the league at this point. He's going to come out and he knows his role. He's going to be aggressive. Shots come towards him. And I just think he's a more dogged defender right now. So, I don't see Darius as a starter. I think his role as a bench player is the one that he's best suited for.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. We've just got a couple of minutes left, and we've got a lot of questions. This is from Hot Pelicans Takes. He says, with a team playing really well when relatively healthy, would it be better to get an average-level wing or a role player over a big-name star? I think I know what you're going to say, Ali, but what do you hope the Pelicans do to add to their current rotation?
I still want to see a point guard. We need somebody just in case of, as we see right now, Elfrid Payton being out. I think the best version of these Pelicans are when we've got a high, fast-paced guard who can push the tempo to extreme levels, just like we have in the past with Rondo, and we've seen in limited glimpses with Elfrid. The Pelicans are not getting those easy points, and I think that is vital to basically separating themselves from the rest of the league in terms of how they play and what makes them really, really fantastic on the court. Yes, we have Anthony Davis. We've got Drew Holiday. We've got Julius Randle, Nico. We've got these great, fine, whatever you want to call it, offensive weapons. But yet when you can add, say, 15 to 20 easy points in a game simply by running up the court and beating the defense, you know, that becomes world beater status. You know, that makes the Pelicans an elite team. So I want to see a point guard on the roster as just a backup, you know, because we've got Tim Frazier, but he simply can't do these things that we require him to do. So, like I said, Elfrid Payton has been wonderful when he's played, but unfortunately the injury bug seemingly is striking him. His name got pulled out of the hat. So I think that's where the Pelicans, that's where Dell Demps needs to look. I mean, getting another small forward would be great, and we've always wanted to see it, but I don't know why you need to disturb this chemistry. You've got five guys averaging 15 points a game or more. I mean, offense is not the problem. And, you know, defense isn't even that bad. So you got to just find, you know, the little problems on the roster, which I think at the top of the list is point guard. So, yeah, that's where I would look. Get a backup point guard that can push the pace.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to give you this question, and then I'm going to go over to Grub so you have some time to think about it. This one's from Finn. He says, what's the package we send if we want Satoransky? So I'm going to give you a second to marinate on that. Grub, this is from Kyle Theobald. He says, would we want basically, would you prefer Bradley Beal or Otto Porter if you had to choose one?
I mean, if you could choose one, give me Bradley Beal. His contract is better. His ceiling is higher. And his talent level is just, I mean, his production and his talent are better. So, yeah, if the choice between Beal and Porter, give me Beal all day.
All right, Kevin, you ready?
Sure. I would start at, you know, trying to see if I could get Ian Clark in 2 seconds for him. If not, I would go as high as a protected first and whatever other salary I need, but I wouldn't trade, you know, it would have to be like Ian Clark, Tim Frazier, maybe Darius Miller in there. I think actually, as much as I love Satoransky, I think right now my number one target would be Dinwiddie. I just think defensively he would fit perfectly. And I think, you know, going back to what Ollie said, I do agree that point guard is the way to go. And I especially would like a large point guard, like Dinwiddie 6'6", Satoransky 6'7", guys that allow you to play three guard lineups where you can have your best players on the court, where you have Etuan Moore, Drew Holiday, and whatever one of those two guys you get. And both of them are adept at running fast-paced offenses. Satoransky's a much better shooter than Dinwiddie, although Dinwiddie's having a great year from three. But Dinwiddie can create. And I just think it gives you a lot of options. And I agree, like, we have two stars. We have two guys that are on the verge of right underneath being star level players. Then you have Etuan Moore. So you don't need to deplete that to get another high usage guy like a Bradley Beal. You know, you just want to get another guy that fits into the system, fits into creating a flow of offense, and makes the rotations better. You know, you have a deeper rotation where you're not relying on Ian Clark or Tim Frazier to play minutes, and you just have really quality players all the time on the court with, you know, staggered amongst four basically stars.
All right. We've got one question left, and I'm so sorry, but we're running out of time. This is from DLQGW. He said, would be cool for y'all to discuss some potential trade ideas and or address the Ringer article about Pelicans trades, trade possibilities. Thanks. I'm so sorry. We'll definitely address this one on a future episode. Obviously, some of the names you just heard are guys we'd be interested in, principally point guard Mios Teodosic, Patrick Beverley, potentially Spencer Dinwiddie, Thomas Satoransky, Jeremy Lin. You can throw them into there. And then as far as wing depth, just somebody like a Tobias Harris would be the biggest name I could think of. But other than that, you're just looking for somebody who's making somewhere under $15 million a year, because really all you have to trade is Solomon Hill, Wes Johnson, maybe Cheick Diallo, Darius Miller, Ian Clark, Tim Frazier. You don't want to trade any of your six principal pieces at this point. So really you only have between $12 and $22 million to work with, and you don't want a big spending guy, because you do have to re-sign Nikola Mirotic, you do have to re-sign Elfrid Payton, you do have to re-sign Julius Randle, and then Anthony Davis' contract is going to come into effect in a year or two, you'd have to think, once he's making somewhere around $40 million a year. So you don't want to necessarily take a big swing. You want somebody around that $10 million threshold, like a Terrence Ross, like a Trevor Ariza, somebody who's expiring. So we'll go into bigger depth on that on a future pod. For now, I have to let you guys go. Thank you to Ali Cosell. Follow him at Ali Cosell. Follow David at DM Grub. Follow Kevin at Kevin B for Bounce. Ali, a lot of stuff on thebirdrights.com. Anything specifically you want to plug?
No, but just please check it out now, because you already alluded to it, but both Trevor and Travis posted two great articles yesterday. Travis with the Drew Holiday being basically a beast, something we know, but it's a great, well-written piece, an angle that you guys haven't read yet. And of course, Trevor's piece on what's the Pelicans' biggest problem, and that's first half defense.
All right, Kevin, keep this one quick. Anything you're working on right now?
I'm going to write some more about point guards that we could target soon, probably the next couple of days.
Sweet. David, what about you?
I'm working on just looking at the front line and where it stacks up with other great front lines. in the league right now and just and historically.
All right, great stuff. My name is Preston Ellis. You can follow me at Preston Ellis. If you have any questions, if you want a podcast, direct those questions to me and I'll institute them on the next podcast. Not sure what that will be offhand, but I'll tweet that out a little bit later. Again, thank everyone so much for listening. Be sure to retweet. Be sure to rate us on iTunes. We're also available on Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. You can find us anywhere. Do us a favor, share the podcast, tell your friends about us. We really appreciate all your help and be sure to go to thebirdrights.com. Right now, because we've got great content and we want to continue to peddle it out there. Also, be sure to check out Crescent City Sports. For now, hopefully we can keep this this streak going. We're about to see Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Jimmy Butler, so that should be another exciting contest, and we'll keep you guys in the loop. Until then, for now, let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and Up and Under podcast networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi, so about the kitchen. Turns out when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance. Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi, so about the kitchen. Turns out when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.